This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
For now, we continue with our weekly feature, Academic Paper, where we focus on an academic paper looking into how we live just as human beings. And today we're featuring Sthembile Sibaya, who is a scholar. And the focus of Sthembile was on identifying the causes of substance use disorder and finding systems of reintegrating patients from rehabilitation centers. So the question that I asked earlier on during the open line, have you ever been to a rehabilitation center? Do you know of someone who's been there? What was their experience like? And coming back, because the focus for Sthembile rather is more around the reintegration into society. So being reintegrated back into society. And one of the metrics that's being used, which in the literature that Sthembile also focused on, the arguments that's being brought through is that you can't look at someone being employed and therefore say that this person has been successfully rehabilitated. What are the other issues that you need to be focusing on as well? What about the support structure from family members? What about the community itself and the community supporting that particular person? And if you look at some of the respondents and the remarks from some of the respondents, they're being vilified, and some may say justifiably so, because of some of them, their conduct and before being rehabilitated and before repenting, possibly as well. But to go back into a society that doesn't want you, how do you cope? Do you know of anyone who's been through that particular experience? 0619 87 000. You can also tweet at Alderan Simpier, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. Sthembile, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Brother Eldon.
How are you doing?
Good, and yourself?
Good. So just quickly tell us about yourself. Where is Sthembile from, and what inspired you to focus on the rehabilitation and reintegration of patients into a society?
Okay. My name is Sthembile Sibaya, and I come from a place called Umzimkhulu. It's a place in the Midlands of KwaZulu-Natal. And the reason why I decided to focus on this research topic is because it spoke so much to me personally, because I was highly affected by the disease in society, the social ill, family members, friends who were addicts, and it was a problem that I felt like I'm compelled to find solutions to help people with SUD in the community.
You can continue.
Yeah, because when you look at so many people that you grow up with in the community and you see that they have now addictive behavior and they have carried so much potential to become great people in society, you know, it hurts. It's painful. And, you know, you sort of like feel compelled as a human being to try and help those other people who have that problem.
Yeah, because I'm sure, like, for other people and our listeners as well, how many times have you come across a former schoolmate or a former colleague, for instance, or somebody that you used to live with in the same road, and now this person is an addict? They are hooked on drugs, wonga, and all sorts of drugs, and you shocked a bit that this is a person that you knew very well. And Sthembile, sometimes even that this is a person that you sometimes even looked up to, because they were so good in what they were doing, whether it was in school or emsebenzin.
Plenty of people, Aldrin. There are plenty of people that I grew up with who are now just victims of this disease in our society. And I felt like, you know, the outlook that we have towards these people is one that stigmatizes them, is one that looks down upon them, and we alienate them as opposed to having a much more empathetic view towards them. and try to help them. You know, you find that there are people who are dealing with a lot of problems in society, and for them, they use substances to escape this problem that they might have. They might have traumas in their life. So regardless of social status, they may be professionals. They may be people who come from poor backgrounds. They may be people who are struggling, just like many of us. And they are victims of circumstance. And our job is just to have empathy and work with them and become allies with these people in dealing with the problem.
Yeah.
Because it's a problem that affects everybody in society.
I think it's very important what you mentioned now as well, that some of them you may find and so forth. And it's touched on your research a bit as well, that the abuse of drugs and recreational drugs, just in general, as well as alcohol, is not necessarily a class issue. Let's just start on that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a class issue, because I'm going to speak about the mental positioning of people, because that's where it comes in. As human beings, I believe that it's easier for us to divert our mentality and our approach in dealing with pain and trauma in our lives than directly approaching the problem and seeking help for it. So it's easier for us to look at other things such as substances to deal with the problem as coping mechanisms. So other people have positive ways of dealing with problems, and other people have negative ways of dealing with problems in their lives. We all have problems. And some people, unfortunately, have never been taught of the good ways that they can deal or having a good relationship with pain and trauma in their lives. And they use substances to sort of numb the pain that comes with dealing with the trauma that they might have had in their lives and the pain. And that pain, it doesn't recognize no social standard or social class or whatsoever, but it affects each and every one of us. And other people may not realize that they're using substances to deal with a certain problem. And what happens is, when you use a substance to deal with a problem that you might have encountered in the past, it starts building an addictive behavior in you. You start becoming addicted to the substance, and it starts hurting you. It starts hurting your health. It starts hurting your mental capacity, and so on. So I think it's about, you know, people understanding that it's not about social standard. It's not about social class or whatsoever, but it's about people trying to cope with the problems that they encounter in their lives.
Okay, so in your paper, the recommendations right at the end, you mentioned that what is clear from the conversations that you've had with some of your respondents as well, and from your research, is that the use of drugs or the introduction into drugs starts at a school level. So if we then say people use substances like drugs as a coping mechanism, what is it about an adolescent who is still in school who would need something to help them cope with whatever pressures that they're facing at the time? What are those pressures?
Okay, it might be the environment that they grow up in. There are two things that can be involved. It's the environment that they grow up in, the traumatic experiences that come with being in that environment. Some students grow up in families that are highly abusive. Some students come from families that are impoverished. You know, some of the things that their parents might be saying to them may be harsh, and they may be abusive towards them. And they might find, you know, comfort in using substances when they get to school. They might find comfort in that to deal with the traumas that they face at home. Mm-hmm. And another thing is, most of young people come from families that are, some of them, they are orphans. Like, they come from single-parent-led households. And they might find acceptance from peers. They might be looking for acceptance from peers through using substances, and they want to feel a sense of belonging that they don't receive from their houses or from their homes, rather. So that those are one of the issues that young people face. But like I said, some of them may not be aware that's what they are searching for, because they just feel like they've been part of the crew or part of their peers at school. But they're dealing with underlying problems that are propelling what they currently get into, which is substance use disorder.
And I wonder then, to our listeners as well, do you know how to even pick up whether your child has started using substances, whether the child is using drugs, whether the child is using alcohol. Do you know how to pick those things up? And how do you go about it? The conversations that you have with your children about drug abuse, about where do you find these drugs, about the availability of these drugs, about alcohol abuse as well. 0619870000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpia, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. So Simtembile, I'm going to ask that we just focus just a bit more on young people and the abuse of drugs before we go into them going through the rehabilitation center and ending up back in society, and some of them relapsing. Because there's also a misconception, I believe, especially amongst black communities, that as a kid you have no problems and you've got you've got no business having problems that you feel pressure you. And sometimes actually those do exist, and they become so difficult to handle that some people even commit suicide. And an example that I just quickly want to make is the citation of Mates in your paper, where the brother speaks about ending up using drugs because of information that has been shared by another brother who has now committed suicide. And for him, this was a coping mechanism, using the drugs.
Yes. A lot of the patients that I've dealt with, their younger ones more especially, you'd find that in their families, they might have had an older brother or somebody that they looked up to whom they've lost. And that becomes something that's too hard for them to sort of like bear on a sober mind state. They can't face those problems while they are sober. So it's like I said, it's much more easier for them to face life of traumas, life of pain, intoxicated. And that sort of like pushes the behavior of addiction in their lives. And that becomes problematic because it takes a long time for young people to identify the fact that they've become addicted to a substance.
Yeah.
They've become dependent on a substance as well. You know, it takes a long time. And I always make a biblical reference, you know, of the prodigal son. The difference between the prodigal son and the pig in a pigsty is that the pig is comfortable in that position of being dirty, of being in that setting. But the human being has to, at some point, come to a realization that this is not a comfortable position, this is not where I'm supposed to be, and they move out of that. Mm. And that's the position that most young people fail to come out of. The fact that they need to come to a realization that they're harming their body, they're harming themselves, and they need to find a much more better way of dealing with their problems. Mm. So until young people see themselves in a space of misery, until they start seeing it as misery, they will fail to address the problem. Mm. They will never change from the problem. So, yes.
Yeah, and I was saying that the other thing that we need to caution our listeners of as well is that you're not necessarily arguing that people go and use drugs because this is a coping mechanism and that's the sole reason. Because if you look at some of the respondents and what they are saying is that their introduction to drugs or their introduction to alcohol even was not necessarily because they had issues. You pointed out, for instance, earlier on, a sense of belonging that comes with it. But also, you could be at a party, gumnandi, sisemjayivweni, and then people then start sniffing stuff and you want to experiment this stuff. And because of peer pressure that may be there as well, or maybe out of your own volition, you decide to try this thing out, not knowing that this is how you actually get hooked.
Look, a great percentage of the respondents that I had, they started off having fun with substances. They started off in parties. They started off experimenting with friends at a young age.
Mm.
And unfortunately, what was an experiment turned out to be something that's detrimental now to their health as well. So that's very much true, because there are substances such as Wunga, which in some other areas is called Inyaupe.
Yeah.
That substance doesn't take long for people to get addicted to.
Mm.
It's the second most dangerous drug in the world, one of the most addictive drugs in the world, and it takes two shots to get addicted to the substance. And, you know, it might just be experimenting and trying it out, trying the drug out in a party. And that might be what starts your addictive pattern. You know, that's what might start you off on this addictive route in your life.
Because now the feeling that this brings is familiar to you, and now you know how to get to that type of feeling.
Yes. And the important thing to note is that the type of energy the drug brings to you, the high that it brings to you, might be so great that you tend to overlook the health implications that it has in your body.
Mm.
You know, the excitement that the drug brings to you, it's over and above you realizing that it causes many health implications in your life.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that is very much dangerous. And I believe parents should speak to their children about. And I believe that, you know, in schools as well, this thing should be spoken about in your LO classes and so on, to educate kids about these things so that they are aware about the problem.
Yeah, yeah. So we're opening up the power line, 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpia, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. We're in conversation with Simthembile Sibai, who is a scholar. The focus is on his dissertation, looking at the reintegration of patients who are from rehabilitation centers and how society then accommodates them. But what we're doing now, before we go to Power News headlines, is dealing with the aspect about why do you end up there? Why do some of them end up there? Enoch on Twitter says that my late younger sister was using drugs in a rehabilitation facility several times. That says she was mentally ready to let... So the facility said that she was mentally ready to let go of drugs. And the sad part is that she received drugs while in rehab. Oh. Mishak, good morning.
Hi, how's it, Aldrin?
Sure, Shomvin.
Fine, thanks. I want to talk about my uncle's story, who was a drug addict.
Okay.
Well, we're living in Mamelodi with my uncle as well.
Yeah.
And my uncle was in Tunyaope. Well, we tried several times. He never went to a rehab. He got arrested several times, and then when we went to check him at prison, he would tell us that no, I never got hold of Nyaupe for so long. Then it means I think I've stopped smoking Nyaupe. But then, sadly, when he comes back out of prison, he then goes back to smoking Nyaupe. Then there was a time where there were guys. I don't know where they came from, but then apparently, well, what he says to me is that they were doing a research. It's students from UNISA. They were doing research, and then they were working together with the Mamelodi West Clinic. Those people are the ones who assisted my brother now, because they were doing their research with a medication that they've just developed, and then they gave it to him. So they prepare you for a certain weeks before they can give you this medication.
Mm.
They take you to their own classes. Psychologically, they prepare you for this medication. They don't just give you the medication. Yeah.
Okay. So they and say, how's he doing now?
Pardon?
How's he doing now?
He has stopped completely.
How long has he been sober for?
Over a year.
Over a year. Okay.
Yeah, over a year.
No, well done to him. Thank you so much, Mishak. Marco Sonke, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good.
Good, good, good. Good morning to your guest as well. I just want to comment with regards to the root cause of addiction. What I've learned, especially that obviously it's a mental thing, given the fact that we tend to focus more on our physical fitness, but we neglect our mental fitness. Like you find that in your mentality, you've got what we call your mind, your will, and your emotions. Those are the things that we are, most of the case, we are not in touch with. And which, when you are not in touch with that, then you are in a situation whereby when things happen, you don't know why they happen, you know, because obviously you are not in control of your emotions. And you find yourself end up taking drugs and all that. So with regards to the caller that just called, what is happening is that in order to deal with that, you just need to get that person to be exposed in better habits. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. And the better habits will then get rid of that addiction.
Yeah.
So basically, if ever
better habits, habits like what?
Look, I get it. Currently, we're speaking about being addicted to drugs.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
So now, what is happening is that there's an exposure that you're exposed to. You are exposed to drugs, or you also maybe you are exposed to media content that is actually feeding that. Mm-hmm. You understand? So if you are in a position whereby there is a better environment that that you are in, because like right now, if somebody you take back to the community and the community is not positioned in a position where that person is able to consume better content or better lifestyle, then there's a challenge of them. That's why you find a lot of cases are not a success.
They relapse.
The environment is not conducive enough.
Yeah, and that's what we'll be touching on just after Power News headlines about. So once the patient has gone through rehabilitation and the rehabilitation process, the program that Simthembile focused on was six weeks. It's 6 weeks, right, Simthembile?
Yes, it's 6 weeks. It's
six weeks. Six
program, yeah.
Yeah, at 20,000 rand per patient.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll be touching on that just after Power News headlines. On Twitter, Senzo says, "This talk about people doing drugs is sad. Don't do drugs, guys, as a belief. I think we all know people who have died from this thing, like Iwunga and the likes. It's not great to watch." Enoch says that that's the tweet that we read earlier on. And with that said, the research that I did, well, it's just not really a great deal of research compared to what I was in Simthembile doing. But for my honors, people using drugs, Inyaope, Estrateni, you know, the windscreen cleaners. And I remember asking one of the guys, "So from the money that you make, what do you do with that money?" All of it. All of it. And sometimes the money that they make run into the hundreds. All of it gets spent on Inyaope. All of that money. I asked him, "But what about food?" And he's like, "No, food, we rely on motorists, hoping that motorists will give us food, but we never buy food. The money that we get goes straight to go to buy Inyaope and make sure that you satisfy that addiction." It's 11:30, time for Power News headlines.
You're listening to Power Talk with Eldrin Sampier.
And we continue our focus on rehabilitation centers. And this is part of the academic paper that we got from Simthembile Sibai. We're also taking your calls on 0861987000. You can tweet at Eldrin Sampier, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. So Simthembile, let's focus then on the institution that you visited, the Newlands Park Rehabilitation Center. What did you find there?
Newlands Park Center Rehabilitation Center, it's one of the biggest rehabilitation center in South Africa, a state-owned rehabilitation center. And what I found there was that, you know, they're really struggling with the number of patients that apply to go there through social workers and from correctional services. And another thing is that they have programs that are outlined for patients as well. But as to the effectiveness of the programs, all of those things are neglected or left to the patient itself post-rehabilitation. So, for example, you have occupational therapy sessions. You have psychologists who deal with the mental aspect of the patients. You have social worker on consultation. And you have the business basic skill classes that we came up with for the rehabilitation center. So you have all of those things to prepare the patient. However, the success rate of those things is highly determined by the post-rehabilitation phase. So that's the important aspect that I felt like was not really touched on, and it wasn't really addressed by the rehabilitation center. So to go back and see and give those patients support post-rehabilitation, because, you know, you can detox the patient, they can go through occupational therapy and all these other phases, but they also need support post-rehabilitation in order to be able to sustain their sobriety.
What's the current model when it comes to public rehabilitation centers? So a patient comes in, and then what happens?
Okay, the model is, I'll start by the application process.
Okay.
So what happens is you can only go to these state-owned rehabilitation centers through referral. It's either from a social worker, you need to contact a social worker, who then contacts the rehabilitation center, or you get referred from correctional services, and you go and spend the remainder of your time or your sentence at the rehabilitation center when they rehabilitate you from whatever substance you are struggling with. So when you get to the rehab center, you go through a phase of a detox phase. That's the first phase you go into. You go through a detox phase where they give you medication to deal with the withdrawal symptoms that you might have, and we have doctors there in place that work on patients having withdrawal symptoms, because that's the most difficult phase for the patients as well. That's when the patients start jumping over fences at the rehabilitation centers. They run away because of how painful the withdrawal symptoms are, which are, I know some people call it arosta, some people call it alostro in some areas. That's the most difficult phase. And then when they make it through that in the six weeks period, then there's the psychological aspect that has to be dealt with. You have the occupational therapy sessions that test the mental strength of the patients and their decision-making ability, because there's a lot of brain damage that happens to the patients as they are consuming the substances. It has a lot of effect on their mental capacity as well. So you have social workers to deal with the problems that they may be facing at home. What could be the root problems that they have at home? But the most important part, and people that the patients responded to, was the program that we introduced with a friend of mine, which is called the Basic Business Skills Classes. Now, we're aware of the fact that these people are blackballed in the community, and they're sort of alienated because of their past behavior. And you sort of make them aware that they need to reintroduce themselves to the community. They need to reintroduce the new person that they are, and it's going to take time. So they're not going to get jobs. And most importantly, the people that come from correctional services are the people that carry criminal records. So what do we do with people? Because, you know, in my language, you say that have to find ways to get these people to be economically empowered as well, to also be active role players in community development. So what we do is we have the skills development classes where we teach them welding. You don't need to have a degree in welding. We can teach you that skill to do that and make money for yourself in the community. And that's one of the most important things, to be able to think post-rehabilitation and feed your mind with positive things and stay active in doing right things in the community. And most importantly, be accountable to some people so as to monitor, you know, your behavior, because that's something that you also have to deal with as a patient.
Yeah.
So those are the phases that they go through.
Is there any monitoring mechanism currently if you leave the a public facility like a rehabilitation center without the program that you guys have come up with?
They do have it, but it's not consistent. They do have it, but it's not consistent. You'll find that they will send out probably a social worker to go and check if the patient is still maintaining sobriety, is still, you know, staying at home and not taking drugs. But it's not as consistent as the program we came up with, because this program ensures that, you know, people are active. And when they're active, they are accountable to, number one, the employer, who now is registered with the rehabilitation center, who reports on behalf of this individual who has a substance use disorder problem. So this one is consistent. However, the one that's currently rolled out by state-owned rehabilitation centers is not as consistent. They leave the decision making to the patient.
Simthembile, are you there?
We need.
Simthembile, let's try again. We've got a problem there with the line. So you're saying that they leave it up to the patients too?
I was saying that they leave it up to the patient to be able to decide for themselves as to whether they want to go for probably AA meetings, to go to seek a job for themselves. And I believe that is totally unfair on the patient, because they will get triggered at some point when they move into spaces where they usually moved while consuming this substance. So they need...
Oh, Stembile, we seem to have a problem with that line. Okay, we're going to try and get you on a different line, Stembile. We're taking your calls as well on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. We're in conversation with Stembile Sibaya, who is a scholar. We're focusing on his academic paper, identifying causes of substance use disorder and finding a system of reintegrating patients from rehabilitation centers and getting them back into society. Let's try again, Stembile. Okay, yeah, you can go ahead.
Yes. So I was saying that it's totally unfair on the patients to not have a proper monitoring system, because they are going back into a community, number one, that doesn't recognize them as people who are positive contributors to society. Number two, they are going back to a place that has so many triggers to actually relapse for them. So they need assistance from people. That's why I always say that we need not divorce ourselves from the problem, but we need to be hands-on and proactive in assisting these people who have this problem, because it's our problem as a whole. So I believe that the current system that they have is not as consistent. They don't frequently check on them that much, and they leave the decision-making to be up to the patient himself. And I believe that we need to be hands-on in assisting them, because it's a problem that they fall as a victim of, and we can assist them in many ways.
Okay. And is there any program that the family members go into, for instance, because now they will have to take care of this patient, or they would have to live with this patient at least. Is there any program that they go through?
I'm not aware of any problem that families go into, but I know that families go through traumatic experiences and they have to also incur the cost of having to rehabilitate themselves, through going to psychologists, through going through perhaps sessions where they get to speak about the problem that they've and the situations that they've encountered with maybe perhaps a family member that was either stealing from them, who was either maybe harming them in a certain way because of the substance use disorder. So there is no program that addresses that directly, those aspects. And I believe that we can structure some strategies to deal with those problems, that because it affects a lot of people in society.
Yeah.
A lot of people become affected by this problem. And to just leave it out there without addressing it hands-on, you know, and dealing with the traumas that people have faced, they need psychosocial support.
Yeah.
And I believe that, a program such as that is really important to deal with it.
Was it last year, Nugurat, that we had one guy who was also a Nyaupe addict, you know? And a number of calls that we got on that day, Stembile, where people were complaining about Nyaupe addicts, of course, and also Umama Oyuan spoke about how Umtuana would come into the house, steal valuables, and go and resell those things so that he can buy Nyaupe. And then there is this quotation that I came across in your dissertation as well from one of your respondents. And this, I think, for me, is the crux of the matter and why society would frown on people who come from rehabilitation centers or people who have been drug users and abusing the substances as well. He says that before I came here to rehab, I'd committed a lot of crimes, Mebra. So it will be very difficult for the same people I'd harm to help me become a better person. I don't think that their hearts have healed as yet. I read that and I was like, that is it. Because there's still a victim outside. The victims still exist, and now you're being reintegrated into that society where the victim still walks around, and that person will have to cross paths with you every now and then, and you've stolen from this person.
Yes.
Yeah.
The reason why I focus so much on the fact that we need to assist these people when they get out into society post-rehabilitation is the fact that in rehab, it can become easier to deal with your addiction because everybody in there is working towards the same goal, which is to get you to be clean. But when you go outside, you have people who don't carry that same mentality, who don't carry that same mindset. In rehab, you have people who motivate you. You have people who support you. You get 5 meals per day to deal with your problem and gain your nutritional strength as well. But when you're outside, you have to look for food for yourself. You have to start looking for a job. You don't have any support from anyone. People are against you because of your past behavior. And that can also take a toll on you. And you might find that, you know what, let me just continue smoking my drugs because it doesn't help anyway to be a better person in society because people still have, you know, carry the same perception about me anyway.
Yeah.
So I believe that by being more empathetic towards substance use disorder patients, you know, we can achieve a lot. I always look at it this way. It's a disease in society like cancer. You look at cancer, and if you had to say that, if you had to treat cancer patients the same way you treat substance use disorder patients, you would have a much less recovery rate of people. With any other disease, if you looked at them and treated them the same way you treated substance use disorder patients, you would have a much less recovery rate. That's why you have a much less recovery rate with substance use disorder patients. It's because they have no support.
Yeah.
With other diseases, everybody supports those people, and they're much more empathetic with that.
Mm.
But with substance use disorder patients, there's little support for those people. And that's why they struggle, because they have to deal with the fact that nobody is willing to assist them and nobody sees them as people who can change, who carry the ability to change and become better people.
A tweet here from Professor Kumalo, who wants to know, what about the notion of individual agency? When does the individual take individual responsibility for their actions?
Okay. I believe... I also spoke about the fact that an individual needs to realize that they have a problem themselves, because you cannot force somebody to act against what they don't see as a misery. If they don't see that the fact that they are hurting people around them by consuming the substance, if they don't see themselves being harmed by the substance, if they don't see that this is causing a problem for their health and so on, they will not move outside of that. So the onus is on them. They have to take responsibility and take that decision to go to rehab. Because no matter how many times I've seen so many patients who come into rehab forced by parents or guardians, but they still relapse because the decision didn't come from them. So it's important for the patient themselves to take responsibility and own their mistakes and own their addiction and say that I do have a problem and I need to address this problem.
So in the absence of the Eureka moment, if that never happens, if that moment never comes where the patient goes, oh, wow, I've just realized that I'm in trouble and I'm going to need help. If that Eureka moment never comes, then what happens?
It's very difficult, because that moment is the one that determines the strength in the strength moving forward from the patient themselves. A greater percentage of the effort that goes into changing comes from the internal strength of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
If that individual doesn't carry that strength within them to persevere, to move forward in trying to change, then there's nothing you can say from an external point of view that can assist that person, because it's not plugging into anything that's internally saying, I need to change, I need to be a better person. So you need to plug into that in the individual. And you need to tap into something that says to him, you know what, I need to change for myself first. And then looking at the impact it's having on my family and other people that are closer to me. So you need to have that within you. Otherwise, you will never reach that.
Yeah, okay. Simplicius, good morning.
Yes, Elrin, morning, yes. I just quickly want to make 3 comments very quickly. The first one is a question that I want to pose to your guest. I used to work for Senk as a social worker. I also used to work for NOPE.
Hi, Simplicius.
We used to give data to the South African Research Council on the abuse, the different ages and stuff like that. Post-apartheid, there was a huge increase in the use of narcotics by blacks.
Mm.
And I would maybe have his opinion as to why was it like that.
Okay.
Dagga was used but narcotics, your stronger narcotics, it wasn't so prevalent amongst blacks as it is now.
Okay.
Right. Okay, that's one thing. The second thing I want to say to him is that in your rehabilitation process, your aftercare has always been neglected by most institutions, simply because institutions, most rehabilitation centers out there for monetary purpose are not necessarily to help the client. So once the client has been through the process, the aftercare process will be left in the hands of the care. And that is the most important process in rehabilitation, because there the actual abuser has been exposed to the reality.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There as to how you deal within that situation and not in the comfort situation where you are between the walls of a rehab.
No. Point taken. Palisa, good morning.
Hi, Adrian, and hi to Sim Tembile.
Sure, good morning.
Firstly, addiction, any form of addiction is an illness. It is a sickness, and we should start there, right? Mm. And we should start looking at it that way. When my aunt was taken to a rehab somewhere in Tshwane, when we went to visit her, she was addicted to alcohol. When we went to see her, the skills programs were amazing, and she was also provided with psychosocial support.
Mm.
A few months down the line, when she got discharged and she went back to her house with her kids and husband. She relapsed in a few months, right? She went back to drinking alcohol and she went back badly. So I feel like as social workers, there needs to be some aftercare program,
yeah.
A continuation of the psychosocial, because we don't know what happens. And as Sintandile said, that once we look at this as a sickness and there's continuous treatment, even after you get discharged, I feel like we can go far. And I know with the social development social workers, they do home visits, but I feel like the private institution also, there needs to be some program that will facilitate that process.
What is it that the private institutions do? That's different.
Excuse me?
What is it that the private institutions do that's different?
Well, with my aunt, there was no aftercare program. As soon as she was discharged, she was not provided with any psychosocial support afterwards. The last time she got support and counseling was when she was at the rehab center. And I'm talking more private institution here and not the Sankas and the like. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, thank you for that, Palisa. On Twitter here, got a DM saying that my son started hurting himself with razors and got hooked to alcohol and drugs. When my husband didn't understand him being gay, he told him he's no longer his parent because he's gay. I had to quickly act and help and get help for him at grade 10. Then my husband now understands I had to quickly act and get help for him at grade 10 then. My husband now understands that he is, understands this is sexuality. As hard as it is for him, now he treats him like his son. Sim Tembile, reaction to some of those comments coming from the callers as well as that DM that I just read.
It's really important just to go to the first caller's comment where he speaks about the fact that post-rehabilitation, people are neglected. And tying it in with the second caller speaking about social workers. I mean, it's plain to see there are a lot of social workers who are out there who can provide this service to the for government, who can take the initiative to support and provide psychosocial support to these patients. Because most of our social workers are unemployed anyway. So why not have a program that will address this issue that we have in our society, because it has great demographic implications as well. It impacts on our economy. It impacts on our health, education. Everything is affected by substance use disorder. So why not have a program that speaks directly to that and addressing, the post-rehabilitation phase of rehabilitation? And I believe that's one thing aspect that is missing. And when you look at the private institutions, most people who are in this rehabilitation industry, they realize that the industry is I'm sorry to say this, but it's an industry that you can make a lot of money out of. And most of them, they really don't have the patient's best interest at heart.
Yes.
But it's about, you know,
it's beneficial to them as well if the patient relapses, because then it means that the beds are occupied.
The beds are occupied again. So they have a patient that keeps on coming. So that cycle is continuous. Mm. And sometimes I even think that the reason why they neglect the post-rehabilitation phase is because it's probably one of those reasons that they want them to come back. And we cannot play with people's lives like that.
Yeah.
We need to take this matter seriously because, you know, as I was saying, it's a disease in our society that we need to pluck out.
I think just all in all, as we conclude this conversation, Sim Tembile, it for me is also about when do we get to a point as a country or even as the entire world, as a globe, where we say that mental health is primary health. Somebody who's going through distress, anxieties and whatever must be able to walk into even a clinic, and there should be somebody there who would be able to assist them.
You know, that's very important because it's something, you know, some people who say that they have a problem of mental health, but they fear speaking about it because it's looked down upon in society as not much of a primary health problem. They don't see it as something that's of urgency. They don't see it as a problem that needs to be addressed. They sort of like say that you need to deal with it yourself. Whereas in it's a problem that has a domino of, that can cause a domino effect on other sicknesses or health problems that you can have as an individual.
Mm.
If you are not okay mentally, if you have a problem mentally, it has a direct impact on the rest of your body and other diseases. They stem from a mental, positioning. Yeah. If your mentality is not in a good place, if you have a mental issue, it has a direct impact on you getting other diseases. So if we fail to have that as a primary problem, we are doing a great injustice to ourselves as people. Yeah.
And Professor Khumalo would like to have a copy of your research. Where can you find it?
Okay, I can share it on our website at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. You can log into there, and they have some sort of a portal there where our research is. So he can look for it. So I don't know whether you can share maybe the topic with him, and yeah, he can find it there.
Okay, no, thank you so much for that. Sim Tembile Sibai, who is a scholar, thank you so much for that dissertation and that paper research looking into how we reintegrate patients back into society after coming from rehabilitation centers and how difficult it is. And hopefully, Sim Tembile, we get an opportunity to witness the program that you guys have come up with and have a full-on discussion around it as well.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.